Good day and welcome to the Cigna Autism Awareness Series conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'll turn the conference over to Lauren Presti. Please go ahead.
Thank you, James. Good day and thank you for calling into the Cigna Autism Awareness Series. My name is Lauren Presti and I am a case manager for the autism team at Cigna. Due to the format of this call, you will not be able to ask questions during the teleconference. However, at the end of this conference, you will be transferred into a 5-question survey in which we are requesting your feedback regarding your experience in today's seminar. After the survey, you will be able to ask questions on today's topic. A handout for today's seminar is available online at www.cignabehavioral.com. On the left-hand side, click on Autism Awareness, scroll to the top of the screen to find today's handout. Please note that not all policies cover today's topic. For more specific information, if your policy covers topics discussed in today's seminar, please contact the autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing Dr. Charles Cartwright. Dr. Cartwright is the director of the YAI Autism Center and Chief Premier Healthcare Autism Institute. Dr. Cartwright, thank you for being here, and you are welcome to begin your presentation.
Thank you, Tigna, for putting on this. A clinician first, and in my past years in the field.
Dr. Cartwright, you're breaking up a little bit on your phone.
Okay. I'm a clinician. I have spent the last 15 years treating individuals with autism who suffer from anxiety. Also conducted research in the field, particularly when focused on such compulsive symptoms in the lives of individuals with autism. If you turn to the second slide, these eyes closed.
Dr. Cartwright, I'm sorry, we're still having a hard time hearing you.
My voice up.
Yes, you're breaking up.
I'm going to find the place to call. Could you just hold on for 2 minutes and then I'll call you back?
Thank you. I apologize for the inconvenience. If you will, please stand by while the presenter finds a better place to call into the seminar.
Am I back on live?
Yes, I hear you. Thank you.
Okay. Apologies to the listeners. I'm sitting in Cape Cod trying to get a signal to call. I thought I had a landline, but I didn't. So I'm doing the best I can. The second slide is of a boy looking off to the left with his hands in front of him. And the question we often have is, people think they're alive. And when it comes to what is internal experience like for an individual with autism? Now, the autism spectrum is defined by 3 areas. Next slide. The difficulty in forming and engaging in respectful social connection is the difficulty initiating and maintaining interactions with others. The second, difficulty communicating with others, using whether it be verbal communication or nonverbal communication. There's significant delays in these areas for individuals with autism. And the third, which overlaps significantly with anxiety, is the need for routine and ritual and the difficulty tolerating change. These social communication delays need to be present prior to the age of 3 in order to meet the first slide. When I say uncomplicated autism spectrum, I mean occurring conditions, whether it be mental health issues or medical issues. But these are individuals, nevertheless, who have significant social delays, communication delays, and have restricted behaviors. the focus of intervention is obviously to develop social skills, develop patterns or abilities to interact with others in a reciprocal manner, as well as to communicate and develop functional language. As far as the third domain is concerned, we need to focus on building flexibility for those who are needing routine and ritual in order to manage their day. Slide number 5. Now, anxiety is extremely comorbid in those who struggle with autism spectrum disorders. And there are 4 main anxiety syndromes that I focus on when I see my patients. There are 1, phobias. These are fears of animals, traffic, crowds, weather patterns, insects. 2, social anxiety. This is something that we often don't think about in our clinical assessment and when we work with children, adolescents, and adults with autism, that they do experience social anxiety. And it's often very hard for them to make contact, to engage, because they experience an increase in anxiety when they do this. The third, which is one that is focused on most often, is obsessive-compulsive symptoms and obsessive-compulsive disorder. These are repetitive, intrusive thoughts, images, impulses that are experienced in a way that lead the individual to feel anxiety in relation to those repetitive, rich, intrusive phenomena. And most importantly, to take away from this series is that children, adolescents, and adults have post-traumatic stress symptoms. And these are not necessarily connected to major traumas such as near-death experiences or abuse, whether it be psychological, physical, or sexual abuse. But it could be what are seemed minor situations, such as the change or an episode of bullying that took place in the playground. The next slide. This is just a reminder for us as clinicians and parents and those who work with and live with individuals on the spectrum, is to ask about social anxiety and try and assess for whether the individual is experiencing anxiety when in the company of people that they are not familiar with. And that's the critical point. It's being with people that they're not familiar with. People with social anxiety tend to withdraw and find it difficult to be in the presence. A life with autism, Temple Grandin. Temple Grandin is somebody that I admire and respect tremendously in this field. Good fortune of meeting her, hearing her speak, as well as her mother. And, you know, when you hear Temple speak, she stands and looks at the crowd and speaks in a way she not speaks such.
Dr. Cartwright, we're losing you again. Hello, Dr. Cartwright?
Dr. Cartwright has disconnected.
Okay, James, can you try to give him a call back?
Sure will.
Thank you. Again, I apologize for the inconvenience. If we would please wait just until our presenter gets connected again. Thank you.
So I was talking about Temple Grandin and how she is somebody who I admire tremendously. She's somebody who can stand in front of a large crowd and can speak with such confidence that it belies a sense of anxiety that she describes. And she herself speaks about how as an adolescent she was experiencing anxiety and she started a medication The one that she spoke about was a tricyclic antidepressant at the time, and that significantly lessened the anxiety experiences that she was having at the time and improved the experience for individuals on the autism spectrum. There's some wonderful YouTube videos that I didn't include in this presentation, but they're worth looking up. The National Autistic Society of the United Kingdom. And they present certain scenarios that bring up the possible anxiety experience that individuals on the spectrum, certainly are present. Like, the one that comes to mind is climbing onto a train, and then suddenly the schedule changes, and the individual with high-functioning autism is just completely confused by this change in schedule. And he stands there, and he starts to get very agitated, and the conductor approaches him, and he gets even more and more agitated. Now, that spoke to me of just how in the common experience of life, when things change, an individual with autism can experience significant anxiety, and that anxiety quickly becomes agitation and often ends up in and aggression. But the important point to note is that the first experience was an anxiety symptom. The next slide. How many of us are familiar with children who, at the age of 2 and 3, who are beginning to show signs of autism, are sitting on the carpet and lining up objects such as crayons? Now, why are children doing this? What is their need? Some would say this is just a repetitive behavior. Others would say that there's an anxiety. This is the emergence of the need for things to be symmetrical. And in the next slide, rigidity and transitions, this is when, take this slide about crayons. If I went and I sort of moved them around, what would often happen is that the child would experience significant anxiety about the change that has taken place and needed the crayons to be put back in the order that they were found. So rigidity and transitions about need for sameness, not being able to tolerate change. And the next slide, warning, autism meltdown, probability high. This is a sort of a wonderful slide that needs to sort of come up in our minds when we see individuals, whether they be children, adolescents, adults, who are kind of hitting a wall. They cannot make the transition easily. They're getting anxious. They're getting agitated, they're getting frustrated, and then what happens? Commonly, the autism meltdown or the meltdown takes place where the child or the individual becomes very agitated, very upset, and in these situations often can become aggressive. And we as clinicians tend to focus on the aggression and say, wow, this child or individual is aggressive. Whereas if we look at it closely, we will find that the initiating event was that the child or individual was anxious before becoming agitated and aggressive. So explosions. Next slide. Why do they happen? There's a pictorial slide, the following slide, where the center piece is a picture of the brain. And the part of the brain that I want you to kind of focus on. Now, the amygdala is a small almond-shaped structure in the brain, but it is the fight-flight center of the brain. And we either, when overwhelmed, we either retreat and freeze, as the picture indicates, or we sort of open up and move forward and become aggressive, as the bottom slide indicates. So it's the fight-flight center. And there's a lot of evidence that the amygdala in individuals with autism is certainly different in shape. If you look at the makeup and the organization of the amygdala, it is different as compared to children with typical development. And it is a real focus of attention for why children and individuals action. Now, in the following slide, what factors are involved in these explosions? One, emotion dysregulation. Many individuals with autism, and you see it around age 2, 3, 4, 5 commonly, begin to show signs of emotional dysregulation. And that is that it's very hard to regulate and maintain a stable emotional state across time. Anxiety. Individuals with autism have tremendous difficulty tolerating uncertainty. What is happening next? I need to know. Please tell me. What is happening next? And these repeated questions often reflect that sense of uncertainty and the need to know what's happening now. Impulse control is the ability to manage frustration. For many individuals with autism, they struggle with frustration control and frustration management, and that leads to the impulsive behavior. And then finally, we must not forget, and, you know, parents will talk about it over and over again, about the person's experience of the sensory world, and that is, how is the world perceived, and how is it different for those on the autism spectrum as compared to those who are not? And the following slide, The Intense World Theory of Autism by Markram and Markram, really captures in a wonderful way that I feel is so clinically useful that every experience of anxiety, agitation, and aggression, if we could think about it using this theory, which in the following slide is broken down into one, the sensory perception. There's a lot of evidence that whether it be auditory, sound, visual, seeing, tactile, feeling on our skin, smell, taste, is that these auditory perceptions are different in individuals on the spectrum. And then the second one is attention, that individuals with autism have this ability to hyper-focus and often hyper-focus on these sensory perceptions that are different and possibly distorted as compared to those who have typical development. Memory for events are often incredible. You know, I find myself sitting in the consultation space and listening to parents often talk about how their child remembers so clearly events that took place in the past. And this is often related to the sensory experience that the child had at the time. Emotional response to the events that are taking place, whether it be a fire alarm that has just gone off in the school. Now, this fire alarm, let's think about it. It's the sensory, the auditory. The auditory is exaggerated. So they're hearing it in a way that's different to us. Attention. They're focusing on it in a way that's hyper-focused. Memory. They will remember, children with autism will often remember exactly when that alarm bell or that fire bell went off in school and what happened at the time. Emotion, the emotional responses are exaggerated and are intense. And then finally, fear, the sense of fear in relation to the events that have just taken place. Now, you can see how these events follow on each other. They happen very quickly, but the experience of fear is nevertheless important because it's that fear that is often the trigger for if they're in situations like being in a school and they ask the question, is the school bell then, is the fire alarm going to go off? They are remembering what happened in the past and they are afraid of that experience and they're afraid of what might happen should this fire alarm go off. What's the relevance of the intense world theory to autism? Well, how is this theory relevant to our understanding of explosions? You know, I've had situations where children have had traumatic experiences on the bus or children have had traumatic experiences while in the care of instructors. And what we need to remember is be aware of the sensory experience where the explosion was occurring. Just think about the sensory environment that where the explosion took place. Understand that this world is being perceived and attended to in a way that is different from ours, who are not affected. And look for past memories, like the situation with an explosion or an event on a bus that led to an aggressive incident. It's a common scenario that parents come in and report to me that their child had an aggressive incident on the bus. I will ask, you know, what was it like from a sensory point of view? What was it perceived? How was it perceived? And were there any past experiences of events that may be relevant to our understanding of why these explosions have taken place? Realize that at the time of the aggression, emotional dysregulation is occurring, and we need to look for the fear-triggered response, the fear that triggered the response of aggression. And that fear is, you know, that's the initial anxiety. That's the initial fear that sort of sets the whole cascade going, and you know, the child loses control. So the impact of bullying, I'll tell you an anecdote. I have a young man who's in treatment with myself for, his name, I'll call him Sam. And Sam came in, and he spoke about how when he was 9 years old, he remembered an incident that took place on a playground where another child turned around to him and chastised him in a very kind of intense, angry way. This memory came to haunt Sam, and at the age of 24, continues to haunt him over and over again, to the point where he feels and expresses the need to go back to that school to find the principal who himself chastised Sam and try to make it right. Now, this was being played over in his mind repeatedly and was leading to aggressive episodes. This, you know, one would rarely call this an episode of bullying, but as I mentioned earlier, this was an episode where this small incident led to an anxiety, a fear reaction, and a memory that was imprinted in that child's life that it got replayed and came back even as an adult. The following slide is just a picture of a boy with head down, sort of, and this was linked to a YouTube video of a boy with autism who was bullied at school. And the next slide is just an example of a piece of artwork that was drawn. It's an oil created by an individual with autism. And what I found so helpful about looking at this painting is that it captures the spectrum. That when I'm talking about individuals with autism, I have to constantly remind myself that we are talking about individuals that are unique and have characteristics that are similar to others, but yet they are themselves unique, and we have to take that into account. Treatment. When we talk about treatment and anxiety, the most prominent and most important treatments to look at are psychologically based treatments. And the first one is cognitive behavioral therapy. You know, you'll see in the literature, the scientific literature, cognitive behavioral therapy is being described more and more often, and models of therapy are being described which are successful in addressing anxiety within individuals. And these focus around the concepts of exposure and response prevention. Exposure is when you're exposing the individual to a situation that they fear the most. And through gradual desensitization, you gradually allow this individual to overcome this fear. Now, many would say, well, individuals with autism are not able to speak. Well, what can be done is one can engage the parents in the therapy to help the parents work on exposure and response prevention tasks in children, adolescents, and even adults who are on the autism spectrum who have significant anxiety. The second one is relational-based interventions. It's one that I put in there because I feel that it kind of gets lost, because individuals, particularly individuals with high-functioning autism or whose language, who have the ability to form relationships, that we need to think about giving these individuals opportunity to form relationships with therapists, and through the relationship, targeting anxiety using cognitive behavioral methods can be very successful in addressing anxiety. Speech and language therapy, very, very important. If you're able to communicate, if you're able to say what it is that you're experiencing, it matters so much, because you can then get across what situations you are finding anxiety provoking. And then, really important, occupational therapy, focusing on the sensory world and the experience of the sensory world, and then addressing sensory issues in such a way so as to limit the effect that the sensory stimuli are having on the individual that generates anxiety. More recently, you know, there's tremendous focus on yoga, the role of exercise, and even music therapy. I say even music therapy, but music therapy is one of the treatments that has some evidence base to it that is not present for many of the other therapies. So music therapy is an important avenue to pursue to assist individuals with autism overcome anxieties that they experience. The next slide, managing anxiety in people with autism. This is a book that came out roughly, what's it, about 6 to 12 months ago, and it's a useful book. It's one of a number, so I'm not promoting it exclusively, but it talks about how we as parents and professionals need to become more aware of anxiety and what the strategies we can use when assisting individuals overcome their anxiety symptoms. Now, let's turn to medication. Medication is very topical, and the next slide is one of a mother putting a capsule in her daughter's mouth. And it is a slide that brings up a lot of feelings about whether we should be medicating, what are the effects of medication on young children's minds, and you know, what's the evidence there is out there to show that these medications are effective, and I will talk about them in some detail. The next slide is a pill bottle with pills. Now, you know, there's a lot of political issues that are going on around medication in children, because most medications that we use are often not FDA-approved medications. And so we cannot, you know, pharmaceutical companies cannot promote medications for the treatment of anxiety for many of the medications that I mentioned. And some of you might be familiar with one of the pharmaceutical industry companies was fined a huge fine for promoting medication in the treatment of anxiety when they had no FDA indication for it. So it's a very topical issue, and certainly even more so in an individual with autism who is unable to communicate for themselves what their experience is. So having said that, medication approaches, the common ones, the first one is the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. And these are, and I'm using the trade names, Prozac, Paxil, Luvox, Celexa, Lexapro, and Zoloft I've left out. The benzodiazepines, which we rarely use in children and sometimes use in adults, medications like Ativan, Clonopin, and Xanax. And the serotonin partial agonist, Buspar, which we occasionally use in the treatment of anxiety when we're using medications, and unfortunately, more commonly used are the atypical neuroleptics, Risperdal, Seroquel, Abilify, and others. Now, these medications have many side effects, and we should try and avoid using these medications at all costs, particularly when we're focusing on the treatment of anxiety. The following slide is categories of medications used by children with autism spectrum disorders. And this is from the Interactive Autism Network data from 2008. And what you'll see is that the majority of medications include, one, the antidepressants, which are the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors almost exclusively, two, the neuroleptics, which are the atypical neuroleptics, such as Risperdal and Abilify and Seroquel, and three, stimulants, which are medications like Concerta, Ritalin, Adderall, Dexedrine, and Focalin. And then small percentages of antifungals, anxiolytics would probably refer to the benzodiazepines like Klonopin and Ativan, and maybe Buspar, and the anticonvulsants, the ones that are commonly used for some children with children and adolescents and adults with autism, are Depakote, Trilaptal, Lamictal in particular. So that gives you a sense of just the frequency, or just if medications are being used, what medications are being used out there, and what's the proportion that people are using these particular classes of medications. I want to finish off on a note for the future. And I'm going to end off a little early, so there's time for more questions. But the first one is the slide on oxytocin. Oxytocin is a fascinating story. Oxytocin is a hormone that many of you might know as pitocin. And when giving birth, pitocin is often given as in a drip to increase the strength of contraction. Now, oxytocin is secreted into the body to help with contractions and help with the letdown reflex of breastfeeding directly in priming the individual to be more social. The thing that when you look out on the internet, you will find that oxytocin is available, and it's known as the trust hormone. And just a small anecdote is that the trust is that when spraying oneself with oxytocin, the supposed hope is that the individual who inhales the oxytocin trusts that individual more. Now, there's absolutely no evidence to that being the case. So as far as oxytocin is concerned, it is used, and in research it's being used as a nasal spray, and there have been a number of very interesting findings, because what I've described in terms of medication approaches, the SSRIs, the benzodiazepines, the partial agonist Buspar, and the atypical neuroleptics, is that these are sort of indirect approaches to treating anxiety in an individual on the spectrum. But what about a direct method of addressing the core symptoms and signs of autism? Now, what oxytocin seems to do is that it seems to make the individual feel more connected and engaged with selected friends and family. And it tends to improve the ability to identify the emotional states and thoughts of those around them. Now, these are research studies, and these are different research studies that have come, you know, to conclude in the following way. And in addition, oxytocin has the ability to assist the individual to communicate more effectively than oxytocin nasal spray, and finally, to be flexible and have the ability to tolerate change. So these are sort of areas that oxytocin has sort of addressed. And in the final slide, just seeing the research, these are the research studies that support this. designed by Guy Simplicio in 2009, oxytocin promotes social and approach behaviors by reducing the feeling of threat or sense of being unsafe. 2. Oxytocin increases gaze specifically toward the eye region of the human face. So picking up, looking at eyes and looking at and being able to pick up subtle changes in emotional states. And then finally, the data by Domes et al. In 2007 suggests that oxytocin improves the ability to correctly identify the mental state of others from social signals from the eye region. So on that note, I want to thank you for your participation and listening to me. I apologize for the initial break in communication, and I'm very happy to take questions should you have any. On that note, thank you.
Thank you. To help us evaluate and improve our program, please complete the following short survey. If you are a Cigna employee, we ask that you please refrain from participating in the survey. After the last question, there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions. Your individual responses will be kept confidential. For our first question, this session provided me with information on how anxiety affects the lives of individuals with autism. Press star 1 for strongly agree, star 2 for agree, star 3 for disagree, or star 4 for strongly disagree. For our next question, this session educated me on treatments and supports available to help lessen the effects of anxiety in an individual with autism. Press star 1 for strongly agree, star 2 for agree, star 3 for disagree, or star 4 for strongly disagree. Now for our third question, overall this session met my expectations. Please select one of the following responses. Press star 1 for strongly agree, star 2 for agree, star 3 for disagree, or star 4 for strongly disagree. Now for our next question, I would recommend this program to others. Press star 1 if you agree, or star 2 if you do not agree. For our final question, please select a response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with autism. Star 1, I am a parent of a child with autism. Star 2, I am a family member of a child with autism. Star 3, for other. Thank you for your feedback and for participating in our program. If you'd like to make any additional comments to help us improve this program or have any questions on today's topic, press star 1 to have your line opened for the conference. And we'll take our first question.
Hi. I have two questions.
Okay.
Have you seen any studies about EMDR affecting or helping anxiety with those with autism?
The short response is no, but I think because of my interest in trauma, I think this is something that needs to be looked at, and I think it's a priority, but there have not been any studies on EMDR that I'm aware of in the treatment of anxiety and autism.
Okay. that thought occurred because a lot of it has to do with the work on desensitizing the memories that come into, I guess, with triggers and sensory things as well.
Yes.
So, yeah.
No, I agree with you.
Okay. And with oxytocin, has there been any studies on it helping those with reactive attachment disorder? I know that's not related to this, but...
You know, it's not a field that I'm familiar with, but it is conceptually, I think it would be a treatment that we need to think about in the treatment of reactive attachment disorder, because that's the primary issue, is the difficulty in forming a stable, sustained, engaged attachment to primary caregivers. And the oxytocin seems to affect the social brain structures and primes them for social connection. And I think that this would be particularly relevant to an individual or a child who has reactive attachment disorder. So, but I'm not myself familiar with the trials that may or may not have taken place.
Thank you. I found that very helpful and informative.
Thank you.
We'll take our next question.
Hi. About oxytocin, does one have to be concerned? Does one have to be concerned that oxytocin will cause the child to be less fearful of legitimate threats, like strangers or I don't know, crossing the street, you know, when it's the red light, things like that. But especially for strangers.
Yeah, I think just conceptually, it seems that oxytocin allows the individual to more successfully pick up on the emotional states of others. And that by my hypothesis is that the individual would then be able to more correctly identify a sense of threat and would be able to make sort of more informed judgments as to whether to trust this individual or not.
Oh, so that's very interesting. So they will be more likely to trust people who are trustworthy and doubt people who are not trustworthy. That's wonderful.
That's the hypothesis, yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Cara, please go ahead.
Hi, I had a question regarding the drug, and if, unless I misunderstood this or didn't get this in your presentation, but is there can the child or a teenager, can this drug become habit forming for them? And, you know, if you have a 13-year-old child, what are some of the things you should look for moving into adolescence and adulthood with this drug?
Okay, so if you're referring to oxytocin, let me just make it clear that oxytocin is under investigational use, and the time period between investigational use, which seems promising, and actual availability as a treatment, we are unsure whether it's years and, you know, just how long. So when I propose that at the end, I'm sort of looking at the real recent scientific data that's looking at a sort of treatment that's addressing core features of autism. But just again, and I'm repeating myself, we're a ways to go before we get oxytocin available for use in the treatment of autism. But let me take your question and just sort of apply it to medications that I spoke about, which is the serotonin medications, which are commonly used, like low-dose Prozac or Zoloft or Lexapro in the treatment of anxiety, whether it be obsessive compulsive anxiety or social anxiety. These medications are not FDA approved in the treatment of anxiety and autism, and but are often used by clinicians to, in low doses, gradually reduce anxiety over a period of 3 to 6 months. And then the question is, how long should these children, adolescents, and adults stay on these medications? Because if the medication is withdrawn, the anxiety will return. That's the general pattern. And what I want to sort of emphasize again is the importance of these sort of therapies and models of therapy, of cognitive behavioral therapy, which are really effective in addressing anxiety and controlling anxiety in such a way that the individual has control. Should the anxiety reoccur, the individual has strategies, or the family has strategies, to assist the individual, child, adolescent, or adult, to gain control of the anxiety again. We try and avoid any medication that really produces physiological dependence, and that's a medication like Klonopin and Ativan. They cause physiological dependence, and they are problematic.
Okay, that is helpful. Thank you.
Okay, pleasure.
We'll take our next question, and as a reminder, that is star one if you do have a question. Caller, your line is open. If you're using a speakerphone, depress your mute function. And we're hearing no response on that line. And at this time, there are no further questions in the queue.
Okay. So on that
okay.
Note, yes?
Oh, you can say thank you, Dr. Cartwright.
No, thank you. Thank you all for participating, and I do hope that this has been helpful. Resources online, you know, people who are publishing in the field, just a wonderful resource is the National Library of Medicine, PubMed, P-U-B-M-E-D. Google it, and you'll get to the National Library of Medicine, and search for anxiety and autism. And you'll get a list of abstracts of all the current research that's been done in the field. And it's often very helpful. I know it's technical language, but it's very helpful to look at what is current in the field in terms of treatment of anxiety and autism. So on that note, I thank you, and I thank Cigna for putting this together.
Thank you so much for attending, and thank you again, Dr. Cartwright, for providing such wonderful insights. Again, if you have more specific questions about therapies discussed today, please contact the Autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Please make sure to mark your calendars to join us for our next Autism Awareness Seminar next month on August 9th at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Standard, when we will be discussing preventing and responding to challenging behaviors in the home. Thank you, and have a great day.
That does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation.